Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, sports fans. It is Sunday, January 19th, 2014, and we have finally reached Championship Sunday in the NFL. What a great weekend this is going to be, and it started off with a bang yesterday. How's everyone doing? Thank you for listening to Beyond the Bench. I am your host, Ryan Stern. You can follow me on Twitter at rstern33bsp for Back Sports Page. Also, make sure you check out backsportspage.com. Go to Twitter, follow them at Back Sports Page. If you want to give us a call, talk sports, 760-283-0846, 760-283-0846. We got a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to break down the two amazing matchups that we have on tap for us today in Championship Sunday. We are going to have Sports Illustrated's Chris Burke come on the show, talk a little NFL, and break down a little bit of his latest mock draft. Yes, it's about that time. We're going to start to... We had Mel Kiper come out with his first mock draft earlier this week. And it's that time where you're going to start seeing mock drafts left and right. Because now, especially with down to the Final Four, you're starting to get a real feel for the actual order. Because the 21 through 32 spots are determined by when playoff teams get eliminated. So we will be talking some NFL draft with Chris Burke of Sports Illustrated coming up later in the episode. But we're going to start off the show with a start to a game yesterday that was about as bizarre as you're going to see in your life. Game between two division rivals, the Vancouver Canucks and Calgary Flames, played in Vancouver last night. So when a game in hockey, the visiting team gets choice of who to put out on the ice first, and then the home team gets to match up. Calgary Flames coach Bob Hartley decides to put out his fourth line, his big tough guys, and in his defense, he's saying that the Calgary fourth line has played very well for them over the last couple games, and they scored a goal for them. So he wanted to set the tone early by sending out those guys. John Tortorella, and these are two coaches that I respect immensely. John Tortorella, who I watched with the New York Rangers over the last 5 years, and we all know how fiery he can be. Bob Hartley did such an amazing job with the Colorado Avalanche in the mid to late 90s and early 2000s. And so now you have two very well-respected coaches, and you have to agree with what Tortorella did. There are some people, he said in an interview after the game, he can't put his best players in that type of spot, to have his main guys, who are the Sedin twins, Daniel and Henrik Sedin, they are the faces, well, I guess you can call them the face of the franchise since they both have the same face. The twins, he can't put them out against the fourth line because he cannot have an injury, especially when a coach like and Bob Hartley sends out his fourth liners to start a game, he's trying to set a physical tone early in the game. You cannot have your top guys out there taking those hits because that's what he wants to do. And I fully agree with what Tortorella did by sending out his fourth liners. 2 seconds into the game, the puck is dropped, and we get four fights right away. Eventually, you ended up with five fights going on. Eight players, four from each side, the first four fights, eight players are ejected from the game 2 seconds into it. Now, this is something that John Tortorella has done in the past. 2 years ago, in a game against the New Jersey Devils, Devils coach Pete DeBoer decided to put his fourth liners out to start the game. And John Tortorella came back with sending out his big tough guys. Now, at that point, the Rangers didn't have many fighters on the team, but the three that were on the team were on the ice, and you saw three fights to start a game. So John Tortorella has really made a stand that you're not going to push his teams around. And Tom Sestito, this is something that you sort of started to hear the opposite from towards Tortorella's the end of his tenure in New York. Tom Sestito came out and said that it is wonderful to have a coach that has your back, that is looking out for the best interest of his players. We all know for those who are New York hockey fans that John Tortorella is going to do whatever is best for John Tortorella. And what's best for John Tortorella is not have his best players get injured. So I'm a little weary about what Sestito said, because I don't know if it's necessarily him having their backs, because we all know John Tortorella has had a history of going out and talking about his players in a very negative fashion to the media. Before anything like that gets said again, let's put a little question mark on that. So the rest of the game, a hockey team plays with 18 dressed skaters and two goalies. So now you have 14 players playing for the rest of the game. It's a lot of ice time for some players who are not used to getting that much ice time. It was a sloppy game. There ended up with 204 penalty minutes. There were 142 penalty minutes 5 minutes into the game. 204 penalty minutes altogether. The Canucks come out with a 3-2 win in a shootout on a beautiful move by Chris Higgins. Chris Higgins is one of the most question. I don't understand Chris Higgins sometimes because he has so much talent. He has amazing hands, and yet he can never seem to put a consistent season together. So But Chris Higgins does get the job done. Roberto Luongo comes back from an ankle injury, plays strong, and the Vancouver Canucks come out with a wild 3-2 victory in a shootout over division rival Calgary. Some other big games in the NHL yesterday. The Rangers continued their hot play. They get a 4-1 victory over Ottawa. Derek Stepan finally breaking out. He's had trouble scoring. He gets a goal and two assists. Rangers beat Ottawa 4-1. Devils go into Phoenix, come out with a 3-2 loss. Mike Smith, not many people talk about Mike Smith. Mike Smith really is maybe the most underrated goalie in the game. And another wild game, but this was wild for a different reason. San Jose goes into Tampa, and Marty St. Louis has four goals, and San Jose comes away with a 5-4 victory because Joe Pavelski gets a hat trick of his own. You got two natural hat tricks in the same game. Winnipeg comes out of a game where they host Edmonton with a 3-2 victory. Columbus with a 4-3 win in a shootout over Buffalo. Toronto in what's always a great matchup, especially on Hockey Night in Canada when the entire country is watching. Toronto beats Montreal 5-3. The suddenly surging Philadelphia Flyers put an end to the suddenly surging New York Islanders with a 6-4 victory. Detroit comes out of a game with Los Angeles. That's two former conference rivals. Now Detroit's in the East. But they've played many a classic game. Detroit beats the Kings 3-2. Hurricanes with a 3-2 victory over the Panthers. The Ducks, the way that I talked about Mike Smith, about being underrated, is there any in the league that gets talked about less than the Anaheim Ducks? The Anaheim Ducks lose their long winning streak on Thursday night, and a loss to Chicago. And then they come back and they beat the St. Louis Blues. And St. Louis, these two teams are 1-2 in the Western Conference. St. Louis was my pick preseason to come out of the West. I thought that they were ready to make that leap, and they've really played well all year. They've gotten great goaltending. But Anaheim and Jonas Hiller, geez, Jonas Hiller had 14 home victories in a row. just an unbelievable stretch of hockey that both of these teams have played. Great game last night. Got over almost 20,000 fans to watch that game between Anaheim and St. Louis. Colorado beats Nashville 5-4 after a fury. Colorado goes up big early. Nashville comes back with a fury, but they fall one goal short. Minnesota with a 3-2 victory over the Dallas Stars in overtime. And once again, Vancouver Canucks get a 3-2 shootout victory over the Calgary Flames in one of the craziest hockey games you'll ever see. Now, moving on to what we've all been waiting for. Championship weekend. Last week, I predicted that we would see the matchups that Fox and CBS are dreaming of. Even though in my heart, I was rooting for the opposite two teams on Sunday, I was pulling for the Panthers and the Chargers, but I on the show I picked San Fran and Denver to win, and that's what we got. And really, as a football fan, I can't be too upset because it does set up absolute perfect matchups in an absolute perfect setting where it's one day, two games for a trip to the Super Bowl. We'll start off with the 3 o'clock game. And this is the one that will be dubbed old school. You got the, in a lot of people's eyes, two of the top five quarterbacks of all time. In most people's eyes, two of the top ten. And certainly you have maybe the best regular season quarterback of all time going up against maybe the best postseason quarterback of all time, Peyton Manning versus Tom Brady, respectively. Early in the week, I was all about the Broncos. I thought that this was Peyton's time to really make his legacy strong. And I still think that he can do it. In fact, I think he may do it. But what's worrying me from a Denver Broncos standpoint is the health of their defense. Von Miller out. And now Chris Harris, their best cover corner, out. It's going to be interesting to see whether or not they take Champ Bailey out of the slot and move him outside. Champ Bailey has had a wonderful career in the NFL as one of the top cornerbacks of all time. But he's getting older, and he's not the same player he used to be. So that's why they've had him play the slot. Are they going to stick a rookie who got absolutely lit up earlier this year, or are they going to have Quentin Jammer move outside and keep Champ Bailey inside, or maybe Champ Bailey just follows around Julian Edelman wherever he goes? And you know, Julian Edelman does not get the same attention that he should. Julian Edelman essentially played Wes Welker this year. he played the exact same role that Wes Welker played in New England. He had over 100 catches, over 1,100 yards. He had 6 touchdowns, and all he did was move the chains all year long. He was Tom Brady's safety net when he didn't really have the tight end safety net that he had over the past couple of years. Rob Gronkowski plays 5 games. Aaron Hernandez, we all know his situation. So as much as I think the Denver Broncos are going to be able to move the ball and score against the New England Patriots defense, the one thing that will scare me, like I said, is the matchup between Brady and the depleted defense of the Denver Broncos. The New England Patriots defense has been depleted for most of the year, and you got to give Bill Belichick, as much as everyone may hate to give Bill Belichick credit, this may have been the best coaching job that Bill Belichick has ever done. He has had so many key players be lost to injury or stupidity. I mean, he has maybe two of his main targets on offense, in the two tight ends. He loses Wes Welker to free agency. He loses Kenbrell Tompkins at points to injury. He loses Aaron Dobson at points to injuries. He doesn't have a consistent running game throughout most of the year, yet they still put up very decent numbers. On defense, they lose Vince Wilfork early in the year for the season. Gerard Mayo gets lost. Unbelievable how many big time, and it's not like it's the backup outside linebacker that they're losing. They're losing Vince Wilfork is as important to a defense as anybody in the league. Because he makes the 3-4 scheme that they run work. He is a space eater. He can beat double teams, make plays in the backfield. And he's been doing it for a long time. And when you lose a linchpin to a defense like that, it's very tough to replace. And when they lost Vince Wilfork, I thought they were done. I thought that was going to be it for the run of the New England Patriots. And yet they still seem to win in any big game. Whether or not they are going to be able, and I don't think that they're going to be able to put consistent pressure on Peyton Manning. And the one way that you can control Peyton Manning is by putting pressure on him. I just don't think that they have, unless you get a play, unless you get something like Jamie Collins, a performance that he had last week against the Chargers. Against the Colts, where he's able to break through some breakdowns in pass protection. Unless you get a performance like that, and I don't necessarily think they're going to, even though the Denver offensive line has not pass blocked very well throughout much of the year, I don't think the Patriots are going to be able to muster up enough consistent pressure on Peyton Manning. And Aqib Talib may take one receiver, and if I'm the Patriots, the one that I take away going to be Demaryius Thomas, because Demaryius Thomas is the most physical, he's the most physically gifted of all of the wide receivers. And you take a look back at the game that they played early in the year. Denver jumped out to an early big lead. New England comes back with a crazy second half comeback, and they win in overtime. There are two major issues with tight ends that were played in that game that are the complete opposite that will be played in this game. Rob Gronkowski played for the New England Patriots in that game. Julius Thomas did not play for the Denver Broncos. Julius Thomas opens up so much for the Denver offense. We all know how well Dallas Clark performed in the Peyton Manning system in Indy. If you're a tight end that can open up the middle of the field, that can run those seams, that can run those quick hitches, run those slants, and Julius Thomas can do that. He's a big, physically gifted tight end. And I think that those two, that the starting tight end for the Patriots, who played in that first game, won't be in. Julius Thomas, who didn't play in that game, will be in. I think there is your difference. I'm going to say a lot of points will be scored. I am looking at a 34-31 victory for the Denver Broncos. And 2 years ago, it was Eli Manning who won the Super Bowl in the house of Peyton. This year, it will be Peyton Manning going to the Super Bowl, played in the game of the house of Eli. Now, if you watch the San Francisco-Green Bay game, and odds are you probably did because that was the highest-rated NFL wildcard game in history. This NFC championship game is going to make that one look like an offensive shootout. This is going to be as physical, and if you enjoyed last night's fights between Vancouver and Calgary, you're going to enjoy this game. This is what they like to call a grown man's football game. And this one will be dubbed New School. Yeah, the old school with the two quarterbacks in the first game, this is your New School game. Colin Kaepernick, Russell Wilson, both in their second years as starting quarterbacks. Colin Kaepernick has been in the league a year longer, but he did not play at all his rookie season. Right now, Colin Kaepernick is playing better football than Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson does not look like the same quarterback that he was earlier in the year. I think a lot of that has to do with the uncertainty of Percy Harvin. Is Percy going to play? Is Percy not going to play? They've known, even though it wasn't announced until either Thursday or Friday, they've known that Percy Harvin wasn't going to play today. And now it's official. He's out with a concussion. And I think that the knowing of Percy Harvin's absence in this game should have allowed Russell Wilson to have a better week in practice, get back on page with his targets that he was able to have such a great chemistry with earlier in the year. I think the biggest player on offense today, the most important player, is going to be Doug Baldwin. I don't see Golden Tate having a big game because I see the San Francisco 49ers think of Golden Tate as the number one option. And he's the most gifted of the wide receivers that are currently playing for the Seattle Seahawks. But Doug Baldwin is the X factor. If Doug Baldwin can make some big plays, then this is going to be a runaway. I do not see someone like a Zach Miller, even though Zach Miller is a real good tight end. I don't see him having a big game because the 49ers defend tight ends very well. And we all know that the focal point for the Seattle offense is Marshawn Lynch. And if Marshawn Lynch can set the tone early in the game, which I think he can, this will be a Seattle Seahawks victory. if you watch this game and just keep your eyes on the trenches, the offensive and defensive lines of both teams whenever they're out, you're going to see maybe the most physically gifted offensive and two offensive and defensive lines in the game. Seattle's offensive line is getting healthy at the right time. In the game against San Francisco, in San Francisco that the 49ers won, the 49ers were able to make enough plays in the trenches. And Ray McDonald, who is the most underrated player on the San Francisco defense, Ahmad Brooks, who gets lost in the talk about Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman as the linebackers of that team. They're going to have to step up and play big games. We all know that Navarro Bowman and Patrick Willis are going to come to play. But if players like that, players like Ray McDonald and Ahmad Brooks, don't show up to play, then it's going to be a long game for San Francisco. And I do expect them to show up. And I would highly doubt that any team in this game gets out of the 20s. Just because, and if this game were played on a neutral field, I would expect the 49ers of the two to be to have the better shot of scoring in the 20s because of the way that Colin Kaepernick has been playing over the past couple weeks. But since this game is being played in Seattle, Rich Eisen, who is the face of the NFL Network, has come out and said that the biggest intangible of the entire NFL is the Seattle home field advantage. Now, I don't know if this was just some people trying to have fun, but and make up a story. But there were people who said that the roar of the stadium and how loud it got caused a small earthquake last week in the Seattle game against New Orleans. A small earthquake. That and another thing that Rich Eisen said about how loud and loyal those fans are. They played Seahawks played a Thursday night game in Arizona earlier this year. And he said that they were in their green room underneath the stadium, underneath the seats, watching the game on a 5-second delay that we all watch as. And he said that when they heard a roar, they knew it was a good play. Mind you, this game was played in Arizona. When they heard a roar, they knew it was a good play for the Arizona Cardinals. When they felt the stadium shake, they knew it was a good play for the Seattle Seahawks. This was a road game. These fans are loud. How many times have you seen offenses go into that stadium and have 6, 7, 8 false starts? The Giants in 2004 went in and had a game where they had 11 false starts in one game. That is a loud stadium, and I think that is going to be the main reason why we see a Seattle victory. the most unheralded player on the Seattle defense, and I think that this is going to be one of the reasons why Seattle wins, is because of this guy. Sure, everyone talks about the Legion of Boom, Richard Sherman, Brandon Browner, who won't be playing, but Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas is the best player on that defense, as I've said in the past. That secondary is awesome. The way that they can man up and take away and still come away victorious allows for their front seven to be able to send more pressure and not have to worry about dropping back into coverage. But the reason, the guy that makes that defense tick the way it does, especially lately, is Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner has turned into a wonderful, wonderful linebacker. And he most likely is going to draw the responsibility of spying Colin Kaepernick. I think he's going to be able to do it. I do not expect Colin Kaepernick to be able to run the way that he has in the past couple weeks, especially, of course, we know he's not going to have the same kind of day that he had against Green Bay. I don't think he even has the same kind of game he had against Carolina last week. But I think Bobby Wagner is going to be the real reason why the Seattle Seahawks are going to be as successful on defense today as they're going to be. Again, I see this being a very low-scoring game. And I'm going to say that one team will score 20. And I put them at exactly 20. And I'll say the Seattle Seahawks come away with a 20-16 victory. The 49ers have had far too many games where they have driven the ball early and walked away with only field goals. Phil Dawson has had a spectacular first season in San Francisco. He hasn't missed many kicks. He's made a couple big kicks. But he's also kicked a lot of first quarter field goals. And I think in order for San Francisco to come out victorious, they're going to have to put the ball in the end zone early. They're going to have to take away that crowd early in the game. So the first offensive drive for San Francisco is going to be their most important drive of the game. But I think that crowd, that defense is going to be so ready and so pumped up. They're going to be able to out physical the 49ers. And so I absolutely say that this is going to be a Denver-Seattle Super Bowl right here in the Meadowlands in 2 weeks from today, February 2nd, 2014. I can't wait. That, and when you talk about offense versus defense, that's about as extreme to each end that you can get. You have record-breaking performances on offense by the Denver Broncos. You have the most physically gifted and dominant defense in the league over the course of the season in Seattle. And as much as that was the most common picked preseason matchup for the Super Bowl. I think that's what's going to happen. We will be joined in a few minutes. We should be joined any minute by Sports Illustrated's Chris Burke. But we do have some NFL draft to talk about, and it's kind of exciting. And we are currently joined by NFL writer for Sports Illustrated. He has done wonderful pieces, especially with the NFL draft, and his latest mock draft is now available on SI.com. Welcome to Beyond the Bench, Chris Burke. How are you this morning, Chris?
Hey, doing pretty well. Thanks for having me.
So, especially now, we had the guru, Mel Kiper, come out with his mock draft early in the year, and that sort of sets the tone for everybody to start getting into their mock drafts. I just put out mine earlier this week as well, but I'd like to get into a couple of your selections, and then sure. We'll round out with your predictions for later on today. Both of us have Teddy Bridgewater going number one overall to Houston. You have Jadeveon Clowney, and Jadeveon Clowney is probably the most, I guess, questioned superstar in the history of the NFL draft because he has so much talent and he can get to the quarterback at such an amazing rate, but his motor just doesn't seem to be there every game. You have him going number two overall to St. Louis. Why do you think that fits?
You know, it's been one that I've sort of had pegged to the Rams for a while now, and Rams fans always seem to argue against it. I can understand why, because they might, you know, I think they're a team that could be a wild card quarterback spot. I think, you know, Jake Matthews makes sense there. Even Sammy Watkins, one of the wide receivers, obviously a trade down for them again, I think works. But I put Clowney there. You know, I think you sort of start laying the groundwork for further down the line when you might not have Robert Quinn and Chris Long together. I also think that you can use all three guys and sort of be creative with it. You know, think back to the Giants with the Tuck, Umanura, Pierre-Paul trio. I think you can do something mm-hmm. similar to that in St. Louis. And, you know, it's already one of the best defensive lines in the league. I think you kind of put it over the top with Clowney. And, you know, Jeff Fisher is a guy that not only loves sort of stockpiling up front on defense, but seems to find a way to make his defensive linemen better. Obviously, Robert Quinn going this year to the level that he went to is a prime example of that. And I think, you know, Clowney needs to land with a team with a coach capable of doing that, because as you mentioned, there are those questions about his motor. So I think there's a lot of reasons, you know, that St. Louis makes sense, and having another first-round pick later, they can then turn and address their offense with that one.
I like to do a couple projected trades throughout each of my mocks, and I had St. Louis actually trading down to number four, and I had Cleveland jumping up to two to take Johnny Manziel, just because I think that they really need to make a splash at mm-hmm. their quarterback. And you have Manziel going three to the Jaguars, and then you have Blake Bortles going to the Browns at four. Tell me about what you think of those two quarterbacks, Manziel and Bortles, whether you think one is better and you think the other one just may go higher.
Yeah, I mean, I still like Manziel. I still have him number two as my quarterbacks. You know, I've been a little more hesitant to sort of throw all my support behind Blake Bortles. And I think he's a very talented guy. I think his potential is almost through the roof, and that's why you're sort of hearing him top five even potentially as that number one pick. But, you know, for me, he's not quite there yet, especially when you compare him to Manziel. And I think people sort of overlooked how talented and how much Manziel has progressed as a passer. You know, he can really hit all the throws. He's got a strong enough arm to stretch the field, and you sort of go back through some of these games against SEC defenses, and he's making those, you know, finding guys in traffic and getting through his progressions, and he's not too quick to get out of the pocket. So I think there's a lot there to like projecting Manziel forward as an NFL quarterback. I think Bortles, you know, right now he's sort of that hot name, and NFL teams definitely like him. And the scouting community obviously jumped on his bandwagon. So I think you probably end up with him in the top 10 just because, you know, so many teams need quarterbacks up there. And I think that trade you mentioned makes perfect sense for that very reason that I outlined in my mock, that if they want Manziel or, you know, Bridgewater happens to fall out of that number one pick and they want Bridgewater at number two, you know, the Browns certainly are a team that could jump up. I think Minnesota is the other one in the top 10 there that you kind of look at and think could go up. And Clowney's a guy really too that I think, you know, if the Rams don't necessarily want him, I think Clowney's a guy that someone could jump up and try to take if they think they can get a lot out of him. He's the Texans owner called him sort of that once in a decade talent. I don't know that he's necessarily there, but he's definitely, you know, when he plays well, he's the best defender in this draft. So I think there's a lot of possibility for some movement up top.
You did mention Minnesota, and we both have Minnesota taking quarterbacks, but we have them taking different quarterbacks. I am not a Derek Carr fan whatsoever. I do think that he is, and I think you also mentioned the name Christian Ponder in your write-up about it, but I think Derek Carr can be the next Christian Ponder. The quarterback that I love going to Minnesota is Brett Hundley from UCLA. I think that he just brings a different element to the game, and he can excel with having someone like an Adrian Peterson and an explosive weapon like Cordarrelle Patterson on the outside. Talk to me about the difference between Carr and Hundley.
Well, you know, I'm not a huge Derek Carr fan either, and I sort of mentioned after this, on Twitter at least, after this mock came out, that, you know, if he doesn't end up going 8, and if the Browns happen to get a quarterback in the top 5, he's one of those guys that's sort of primed for that kind of Matt Barkley-type fall. I think he could, you know, drop into the round 2 for sure. I think a lot of it has been there's been a lot of hype surrounding him, and he's not he's certainly not a polished quarterback at this point. You know, he's got a great arm and obviously put up huge numbers in college, but you watch him and he's got sort of those Matthew Stafford mechanics that drive people crazy, you know, throwing off the back foot and trying to whip it into traffic because he trusts his arm strength so much. And those sorts of things that, you know, when the Lions have struggled this year and a couple of years ago, you look back and say, well, is Matthew Stafford the guy that can win in this league because of how many mistakes he makes? And I think we'll probably end up having a lot of the same conversations about Derek Carr, no matter where he winds up, because he needs to progress a ton as a passer. And I think this, as a decision maker too, he's coming out of an offense that was very favorable to what he can do. And he certainly will be challenged at the next level. You know, there is a group of quarterbacks after him. You look at guys like Zach Mettenberger will be there in round 2, I think, probably. And now Jimmy Garoppolo, who played so well in the Shrine game yesterday, I think you're going to hear a lot more about going forward. I'm still the guy that I almost threw into the mix, honestly, and he plays – a little bit similar to Taj Boyd, and not necessarily, or I just hit my hand there, but not he doesn't play the same game as Brett Hundley, but he's similar. He is Taj Boyd, who I don't think is a top 10 guy, but I think some team's going to catch up higher than people might be expecting and has a chance to be a really good quarterback in the league.
One of the things that really stood out about last year's draft was the overwhelming number of offensive linemen that were picked earlier in the draft. I think because of the quarterback situation and how stacked this year's class is with quarterbacks, it really is taking a lot of the attention off of the offensive linemen. We both like Jake Matthews as the number one offensive lineman. The guy that is really close to him and who I can actually see being the number one picked is Greg Robinson out of Auburn. I love his physicality as a run-blocking offensive tackle, and we both have him going number 12 to the Giants. We are located here in New Jersey, right a few miles from MetLife Stadium, and I think that that would be an absolute perfect fit for the Giants. What do you think about Greg Robinson's pass blocking abilities? We all know how good of a run blocker he is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously the question, because especially coming out of that Auburn offense, they threw, but it wasn't the main focus there. They wanted to run the football.
He didn't have to do it a lot.
The football a lot, right? So you're coming. I think that there's certainly stuff to work on in his game as a pass blocker. He's a better run blocker right now than he is a pass blocker, but I also think that he's more than capable of getting to the next level, because you see it's the same things that work in the run blocking. You know, he's obviously got great size. He's got good footwork. He's strong, you know, when he sort of sets his base and anchor and all that sort of thing, everything you'd want from a guy that projects out to be a really good pass blocker at the next level. So, I think there's a possibility he winds up in that discussion for the top offensive tackle off the board. I still think Jake Matthews is kind of further along in terms of being a plug-and-play guy at the next level. But, I think Robinson makes sense for the Giants, because they obviously need some help on that offensive line. And I think he's, you know, you sort of look at what they like to do on offense, and I think he would work well there, because, you know, he should help that run game. But he also can hold his own, at least more so than some of the guys did this year, in giving Eli Manning some time.
One more before I get your picks for today.
Sure.
We all know that the New York Jets need skill position upgrades, especially at the either receiver or tight end. You have all three of Watkins, Lee, and Evans off the board, as well as Eric Ebron off the board. So you have the Jets taking Jason Amaro, the tight end out of Texas Tech. One, give me your thoughts on Amaro. And two, do you think the Jets, if they start to see those pass catchers come off the board, are going to jump up to grab one of those top guys?
I think it sort of depends on who they have their eye on. Really do think Sammy Watkins is the guy that's gone. 10's really the latest I can see him going to Detroit.
Right.
I think he's probably gone before that.
I had him 7 to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I think that fit makes sense. I think Oakland makes sense. I mentioned St. Louis. If they traded down, I think could be a possibility. So I think there's a lot of teams up there. So, you know, if they happen to have Evans or Lee as their, must-get guy, I could see them moving up to try to get one of those two. Same thing for Ebron out of North Carolina. You know, if he's sort of the standout tight end that they're looking for, they could go up. I don't think there's that much gap between him and Jason Amaro. They're both guys that you're probably going to have to work with as blockers. I think Ebron's farther along there, which is why I have him ahead of Amaro in the mock and in my just sort of tight end rankings. I think he's a better blocker. But they're both going to be guys that you can move out into the slot and you can sort of stretch defenses with and do a lot of different things in the passing game. So if you miss out on one of those top three receivers, I think that pick makes sense. And the other reason I did it is because you look at this wide receiver class, I think they could take, it certainly could justify taking someone else at the wide receiver spot there, Kelvin Benjamin or Jordan Matthews.
Jordan Matthews.
There's a ton of guys there, but I think that's the other reason that I had him going tight end. I think there's three clear round one potential tight ends in Ebron, Jason Morrow, and Austin Seferian Jenkins from Washington. Mm-hmm. And there are like 12 or 13 wide receivers that you could justify in the top 40 picks. So I think it makes more sense to wait on wide receiver than it does to wait on tight end, which is one of the main reasons I went with that pick there.
All right. Before I let you go, I got to ask you for your projections for today's games.
Well, I've had the I had the Broncos and Seahawks in the Super Bowl for our preseason predictions, so I don't know that I've ever gotten both Super Bowl teams right, so I think I got to stick with them until they prove me wrong. So I'm going to stay with the home teams, I guess.
What do you see as being the more interesting game to watch? We know that both of these games should be great games. If you had to watch one of them, which are you watching?
I think they'll both be really good. I'd probably watch Denver New England just because I'm a sucker for that quarterback matchup, I think. But I expect if either one winds up being more than one or two possession final score, I'd be surprised. So I think it's going to be a fun day and hopefully a couple of really good close games.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes. Hopefully as we get closer to the draft, we can have you on again. If you want, you can follow Chris on Twitter at ChrisBurke_SI. Thanks again, Chris, for joining us and hope to talk to you soon.
Sure. My pleasure. Thanks.
That is the great Chris Burke, Sports Illustrated. Again, thank you for giving us a few minutes today. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. I hope you all enjoy this wonderful, wonderful Championship Sunday that we're about to embark on. You can follow my live tweeting of both of the games. Again, follow me on Twitter at rstern33bsp, at rstern33bsp. Follow at Backsports page. Follow the show on Twitter at Beyond the Bench, or go to facebook.com/BeyondTheBenchBSP. Once again, my picks for today, I'm going to take both home teams just as Chris Burke did. I just think that the offense is going to be too much, that the Denver offense is going to be too much for the Patriots, and I think the Seattle defense is going to be too much for the San Francisco 49ers. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. I hope you have a wonderful week. Next week we will be breaking down a little bit of what happened today, and maybe some surprises in store for you. So everyone, have a great week. We'll talk to you next one.